Andre Gregory has been directing in New York for more than half a century. He has collaborated on film versions of his theater productions with Wallace Shawn, Louis Malle, and Jonathan Demme. He's also an actor, writer, teacher, painter, and author of the poetry collection Bone Songs. He's now written an autobiography of sorts. It is called This Is Not My Memoir. It tells Gregory's life story for the first time, where he shares memories from a life lived for art, including stories from the making of the classic 1981 independent film, My Dinner with Andre.
Well, have a real relationship with a person that goes on for years, that's completely unpredictable. Then you've cut off all your ties to the land and you're sailing into the unknown, into uncharted seas. I mean, you know, people hold on to these images of father, mother, husband, wife, again, for the same reason, as they seem to provide some firm ground. But there's no wife there. What does that mean? A wife, a husband, a son. A baby holds your hands, and then suddenly there's this huge man lifting you off the ground, and then he's gone. Where's that son?
Taking on the dizzying, wondrous nature of a fever dream, This Is Not My Memoir includes fantastic and fantastical stories that take the reader from wartime Paris to Golden Age Hollywood, from avant-garde theaters to monasteries in India. Again, the name of the new book is This Is Not My Memoir, and it's a great pleasure to welcome Andre Gregory to the roundtable this morning. Andre, what a great pleasure. Thank you very much for being with us.
It's a nice snowy day.
It is. It's beautiful, and I love having you on. This, of course, you're an iconic figure in American theater, the star of My Dinner with Andre. At what point did you say, okay, this would be, okay, this is not my memoir, but this is something that I would like to share with people?
Well, it was a decision that was completely taken out of my hands, and in a way it wasn't mine. Friends would often say to me, you've had such an astounding life, such an amazing life, you should write a memoir. And I would always answer, if there's one thing I will never, ever do, it's to write a memoir. And that's partly because I love to exist in the present, and I don't really, in general, like to reminisce about the past. But then I had lunch with the son of one of the first women to ever turn me down. She was a very old friend. He was, as far as I knew, he was a very successful writer. And I was telling him a story, and he said, you should write a memoir. And I said, I've been told that, but who would ever want to publish it? And he said, we would. And it turned out he was one of the main editors of Farrar, Straus, Giroux. So over lunch, he was offering me a book and an advance, and I just felt, well, this is destiny. I can't say no.
And with that said, you certainly do deal with the past, but you also are contemplating aging in this book, of what it is, what that process has been like for you.
Well, it's pretty important to an awful lot of people, and it's a subject often that is only dealt with in self-help books or taboo and not dealt with at all. But, you know, one's 80s or 70s or what have you should be, is the word, a capstone for one's life. You've made it. You're not below the grass. You're above the grass. And the one major task that is left to you is how to die hopefully, gracefully, and hopefully without fear. One of the great actresses who was in our film, Vanya on 42nd Street, her dying words were Geronimo. So I would like to be able to shout Geronimo. I think it's an important subject. And, of course, if you're covering your life from at one point or another, I mean, the structure of the book, of course, is kaleidoscopic. It's not linear.
Right.
But if at different points you're covering everything from childhood to being an octogenarian, you can't avoid that subject.
You write in the book, my parents were great survivors, but they were wretched parents. How so?
Well, you know, they were part of a generation that never really thought about having kids. They just had them. Once they had them, they didn't really know what to do with them, and they weren't particularly interested in them. And my mother and grandmother knew so little about child rearing that they thought caviar would be nourishing for me, and that was the only food they gave me, so I nearly died of starvation. And then also there was the nanny who didn't like little children who cried, so she gave me sleeping pills mashed up in my baby's milk so that I couldn't even walk. And then, you know, they were two Jews faced with the coming Nazi horror, and they had to make very difficult and very stark decisions about whether they would stay in Europe or whether they would try to emigrate. So they didn't have much time for little kids.
I mean, the stories that you tell here are just incredible. So, you could focus on any of them for 10 minutes, but or a book for that matter. But so your mother, as you say, while your father was bipolar, your mother probably had something, but you don't know what that was. But she had affairs with Errol Flynn, Bugsy Siegel. I mean, this woman has lived.
I think it's something that came out in an article. She didn't have an affair with Bugsy Siegel. She did with Errol Flynn. She played cards every week with Bugsy Siegel, and she played cards with him one night and went home to bed. And when she woke up in the morning, the L.A. Times had a big headline saying he'd had his head blown off by the mafia. So they were close, but they weren't lovers.
And so I guess the very weak question that I ask is, what is it like to grow up and realize, as you start to realize that that's your life, that these are the parents that you're living with, and how surreal all that is, which I guess explains the lifetime of therapy.
It does. I think it's too far back to really remember exactly what it felt like, but I think it was extremely lonely and scary at times. And there's a wonderful book by Maria von Franz, an analyst. The book is titled Prisoners of Childhood. And I think if you're in that kind of home, you just don't know if childhood will ever end. And if, you know, like Harvey Weinstein, you haven't been sentenced to life in prison.
Mm. When you look at this, and I guess I should have asked this at the beginning, but the name of the book, it indicates, of course, that this is not my memoir. How welcome were you to the idea of writing about all aspects of the life? I don't think I'm telling tales out of the school, but the first thing you said to me when you picked up the phone was, ask me anything. So you're an open book. What is wrong with writing a cradle-to-grave memoir?
No, I don't think there's anything wrong with it. It's just not my taste. You know, when if I start reading a book that says my great-great-grandfather and my great-great-grandmother met at DeWitt High School, they both were on the literary, you know, and it goes on and on about people that you're not interested in.
Yeah.
Rather than the central character, I just lose interest.
Give me a sense of what you made of the experience of My Dinner with Andre and how that became such the runaway train that it did I would say, surprising everyone, including both you and Wallace Shawn.
Yeah. You know, we never thought we'd be able to get it made into a movie, because who would ever want to put money into a movie about two unknown people talking? And in fact, a nice guy who had invested in a lot of my plays before my dinner with Andre wrote me when I asked him to invest in it. He said, "I'm insulted and I'm hurt. Why would you want to ask me, you know, to invest in this?" And so, and the thing of raising the money for the movie was really like climbing Everest. It was impossibly difficult. But so we knew, even if we could make it into a film script, who in the world would ever want to direct it? And if it got made into a movie, who in the world would ever want to see it? So I know we were both staggered by the success of the film and the ongoing success, because generation after generation discovers it and loves it.
Being a part of the theater world for...
I just wanted to throw in that we got some wonderful letters after the film came out. One guy said, "I've been in the United States Marines for 15 or 20 years or what have you. I saw your movie and I've decided to become a cellist." A woman wrote to us and said, "Your movie has helped me to face death." You know, if you can inspire people like that, it's such a great thing.
When you look at the movie, you are playing a version of yourself, or is that you?
Well, it's both. It's a character based on me, but only on certain aspects of me. I mean, the guy in the movie can't shut up. He just talks and talks and talks. I tend to like to be quieter. He's maniacally driven, and to some extent, he's a raging narcissist. I like to think that that's only based on a part of who I am. But since the role was based on me and is a strangely fictional, real hybrid, it was very difficult to figure out how to perform him, because all of us are made up of so many different selves. For instance, I've been kicked out of four gyms. Only two people know that or know why I was kicked out of four gyms, and other friends would say, "Oh, that would never happen to Andre. He's not that kind of person." So we have multiple selves, and it was very complicated figuring out which part or parts of myself I should play to make a performance.
To have that kind of performance, though, and not to take away from your tremendous performance, but given that it is a conversation, there must be incredible trust and understanding with the person who is volleying with you, in this case, Wallace Shawn.
Well, we've been partners for 50 years.
Yeah.
We're like brothers.
So that trust is something that really can't be duplicated.
Oh, no. You either have it or you don't.
Yeah. When you look back, do you look back, given what you've said about looking back in the past, do you watch that film ever again, or do you just...
Well, I do. Maybe every 10 years I watch it. And the last time I watched it, I was stunned by realizing how, from the very beginning to the end of a film, it's an indictment of the injustices of capitalism and a fear for approaching fascism. So art can change with time. And I realized seeing it the last time that it was much more political than even I remembered it being.
Mm. Tell us about the cover of the book.
Oh, the cover of the book is a self-portrait I did, a portrait of myself, and sort of in a matter of weeks, I did about 16 of them. They were just on show in the painting show that was done of my work, and it's six different aspects of this guy, Andre Gregory, and none of them look the same. But I thought this one was sort of wacky and intense and would be appropriate for the cover.
Yeah, a little mysterious, a little devilish.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You...
Well, that devilish one was partly the guy who would get buried alive in Montauk and who would get thrown out of three or four theaters of his own making.
Are you proud of that?
Am I proud of it?
Yeah.
I wouldn't say. I was probably proud of it when I was younger. Now it just seems yet another step on the strange, wondrous journey that has been my life.
Meaning, would you do something like that? Do you see it in you to do that kind of thing to get kicked out?
Today? No. I'm a more peaceful person. No, I wouldn't do it today.
And is that inevitable maturation, or is that a concerted effort on your part to say, okay, enough of that?
No, I don't think I ever did say enough of that. I think it's just I changed, and as I changed, the work changed.
You write quite a bit in the book, toward the end of the book, about your changes as you've gotten older, and one of the things which you just alluded to, of course, is the cover of the book and painting, which has become a large part of your life. So, how do you see those changes and what has caused them, you think?
Well, I think what's caused them is, if you like to cook, which I don't, by the 20th time you cook a soup, the ingredients that go into it will be very different, and hopefully more delicious. We are the sum of our parts. We're the sum of our years. Everything, I think, that we do in life leads to something else, so that a human being can be a growing and changing work of art.
When you think of a work of art, so that was for such a long time theater, and does it still give you the same stimulation, if you will, that painting, that acting did?
No, the thing that gives me the most is painting. But then the writing of the book was something I had never, ever done before, of course. And there was, even though it was very, very difficult to do, it was very satisfying to do. And now there are these rave reviews coming in about the book, and that's very satisfying. So it's another adventure.
And you like adventures?
Oh, yeah. I do. I do.
And in putting this down on paper and looking at it, do you get a sense of what you are proud of what you feel you have accomplished that you would like to be the Andre Gregory legacy?
Well, I guess it's a good question. I guess I'm very proud of having done work that could inspire people, and inspire people to hope and inspire people to not be afraid of their devils, and still aspire to meet their angels. So the fact that a lot of this work has thrilled and inspired people is very, very gratifying.
Given the joy that you just explained and expressed in writing, would you write more? Would you do this again?
Never! Exclamation point.
You're done.
I'm done, yeah.
So, is there, with that said then...
Well, of course, you should never say never.
That's right. But what do you feel you didn't get to that perhaps you would have liked to?
Great question. I can't think of anything because the book covers amazing stories, personal life, the problems of aging, relationships, family. There's a lot in there. I don't think I could think of anything more that I wanted to write.
Right. And because there is such a cast of characters in this book and such an amazing list of names that, as I said, anyone could go for its an entire chapter. But I assume that from those experiences, you learn to welcome them as learning experiences, and that there's also a certain confidence that comes with that about, okay, well, I've done this. I can do this next thing now.
Well, yes and no. I need to get a knee replacement, which I'm going to do. I've never done that before. I'm sort of terrified.
Yeah.
So even though everybody tells me it's now quite simple to do. So everything new that you do can be a little scary. Although, of course, as you say, the confidence that one has built up over years helps one face those things.
Well, the name of the book is This Is Not My Memoir, and it is just a beautiful book by FSG, published by FSG, and Andre Gregory is the author. Andre, what a great pleasure to speak with you. Thank you so much for spending time with us.
Well, thank you, and it has been a pleasure, and enjoy this cold day.
And to you, and best of luck with the knee replacement.
Thank you.
All right.
Keep your fingers crossed.
Indeed. Be well. Thank you very much. Again, Andre Gregory is the author of This Is Not My Memoir. The book is published by FSG. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.